जयो राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी, जय गोपी जनवल्लभा गिरिवर धारी, जय गोपी जनवल्लभा गिरिवर धारी, यशोदानंदन भ्रज जन रंजन, यशोदानंदन भ्रज जन रंजन, यमुना तीरावन चारी, यमुना तीरावन चारी, जयो राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी, जयो राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी, ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय, ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय, ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय, हरे कृष्णा। Welcome to today's morning Srimad Bhagavatam class. We are reading from Canto 5, Chapter 16, entitled A Description of Jambudvipa. We are going to cover text 22 to 25. Okay, so let's see text number 22. I'll just read the text. We can repeat the translation. Yastu Mahakadamba Supershiva Nirudho Yastasya Katarebhyo विनिष्ट्र पंचयाम परिनाह पंच मधु धारा सुपाश्व शिक्षरात पांततो अपरणेत्मानं इलावृतं अनुमोदयन्ति। ट्रांसलेशन प्लीज रिपीट। ऑन द साइड ऑफ सुपाश्व माउंटेन स्टैंड्स अ बिग ट्री कॉल्ड महाकदंब which is very celebrated. From the hollows of this tree flow 5 rivers of honey, each about 5 yamas wide. This flowing honey falls incessantly from the top of Suparshva mountain and flows all around Ilavrita Varsha, beginning from the western side. Thus the whole land is saturated with the pleasing fragrance. Purport by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. The distance between one hand and another when one spreads both his arms is called Vyama. Jai Shri Radha Vrindavan Bhairava Bhagavan ki jai, Shri Gauranga Mahaprabhu ki jai. This comes to about 8 feet. So which means even people had very wide hands. This is not 8 feet. Right? Imagine somebody whose hands are also very wide. Thus, each of the rivers was about 40 feet wide, because Panchavyama, 5 into 8, making a total of about 200 feet. Text 23, translation, the air carrying the scent from the mouths of those who drink that honey perfumes the land for 100 yojanas around. 24, similarly, on Kumuda mountain, there is a great banyan tree which is called Shatavalsa because it has 100 main branches. From those branches come many roots and from which many rivers are flowing. These rivers flow down from the top of the mountain to the north side of Ilavrata Varsha for the benefit of those who live there. Because of these flowing rivers, all the people have ample supply of milk, yogurt, honey, clarified butter, ghee, molasses, food grains, clothing, bedding, sitting places and ornaments. All the objects they desire are sufficiently supplied for their prosperity. And therefore, they are very happy. Purport. The prosperity of humanity does not depend on a demoniac civilization that has no culture and no knowledge, but has only gigantic skyscrapers and huge automobiles always rushing down the highways. The products of nature are sufficient. When there is a profuse supply of milk, yogurt, honey, food grains, ghee, molasses, dhotis, saris, beddings, sitting places and ornaments, the residents are actually opulent. When a profuse supply of water from the river inundates the land, all these things can be produced. And there will be no scarcity. This all depends, however, on the performance of sacrifice as described in the Vedic literature. Annad bhavanti bhutani parjanyat anna sambhava yajnyat bhavanti parjanyo yajna karma samudbhavaha. All living bodies subsist on food grains, which are produced from rains. Rains are produced from performance of yajna, sacrifice. And yajna is born of prescribed duties. These are the prescriptions given in Bhagavad Gita 3.14. If people follow these principles in full Krishna consciousness, human society will be prosperous and they will be happy both in this life and in the next. Text 25, translation. The residents of the material world who enjoy the products of these flowing rivers have no wrinkles on their bodies and no grey hair. They never feel fatigue and perspiration does not give their bodies a bad odor. They are not afflicted by old age, disease or untimely death. They do not suffer from chilly, cold or scorching heat, nor do their bodies lose their luster. They all live very happily without anxieties until death. Purport. This verse hints at the perfection of human society even within this material world. The miserable conditions of this material world can be corrected by a sufficient supply of milk, yogurt, honey, ghee, molasses, food grains, ornaments, bedding, sitting places and so on. This is human civilization. Ample food grains can be produced through agricultural enterprises and profuse supply of milk, yogurt and ghee can be arranged through cow protection. Abundant honey can be obtained in the forests if the forests are protected. Unfortunately, in modern civilization, men are busy killing the cows that are the source of yogurt, milk and ghee. They are cutting down all the trees that supply honey and they are opening factories to manufacture nuts, bolts, automobiles and wine instead of engaging in agriculture. How can the people be happy? They must suffer from all the miseries of materialism. Their bodies become wrinkled and gradually deteriorate until they become almost like dwarfs, and a bad odor emanates from their bodies because of unclean perspiration resulting from eating all kinds of nasty things. This is not human civilization. If people actually want happiness in this life and want to prepare for the best in the next life, they must adopt a Vedic civilization. In a Vedic civilization, there is a full supply of all the necessities mentioned above. Om Ajnanatimirandhasya ಜ್ಞಾನಾಂಜನಾಶಲಾಕಯಾ ಚಕ್ಷುರುನ್ಮೀಲಿತಂ ಯೇನ ತಸ್ಮೈ ಶ್ರೀ ಗುರವೇ ನಮಃ. ನಮಃ ಓಂ ವಿಷ್ಣುಪಾದಾಯ ಕೃಷ್ಣಪೃಷ್ಠಾಯ ಭೂತಲೆ ಶ್ರೀಮತೇ ಭಕ್ತಿವೇದಾಂತ ಸ್ವಾಮಿನ್ನಿತಿ ನಾಮಿನೇ. ನಮಸ್ತೆ ಸಾರಸ್ವತೇ ದೇವೇ ಗೌರವಾಣಿ ಪ್ರಚಾರಿಣೇ ನಿರ್ವಿಶೇಷ ಶೂನ್ಯವಾದಿ ಪಾಶ್ಚಾತ್ಯ ದೇಶತ್ತಾರಿಣೇ ವಾಂಛಾಕಲ್ಪತರುರ್ಭ್ಯಶ್ಚ ಕೃಪಾ ಸಿಂಧುಭ್ಯ ಏವ ಚ ಪತೀತಾನಾಂ ಪಾವನೇಭ್ಯೋ ವೈಷ್ಣವೇಭ್ಯೋ ನಮೋ ನಮಃ. ಜಯ ಶ್ರೀ ಕೃಷ್ಣ ಚೈತನ್ಯ ಪ್ರಭು ನಿತ್ಯಾನಂದ ಶ್ರೀ ಅದ್ವೈತ ಗದಾಧರ ಶ್ರೀವಾಸಾದಿ ಗೌರಭಕ್ತವೃಂದ. ಹರೇ ಕೃಷ್ಣ ಹರೇ ಕೃಷ್ಣ 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 ಹರೇ ಹರೇ, ಹರೇ ರಾಮ ಹರೇ ರಾಮ 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 ಹರೇ ಹರೇ. ಹರೇ ಕೃಷ್ಣ. ವೆಲ್ಕಮ್ ಟು ಟುಡೇಸ್ ಮಾರ್ನಿಂಗ್ ಭಾಗವತಂ ಡಿಸ್ಕಷನ್. ಸೊ ವಿ ಆರ್ ಗೋಯಿಂಗ್ ಥ್ರೂ ವಾಟ್ ಈಸ್ ಒನ್ ಆಫ್ ದ ಚಾಲೆಂಜಿಂಗ್ ಸೆಕ್ಷನ್ಸ್ ಆಫ್ ಭಾಗವತಂ ಟು ಡಿಸೈಫರ್, ಟು ಅಂಡರ್ಸ್ಟ್ಯಾಂಡ್, ಟು ಈವನ್ ಸ್ಪೀಕ್ ಅಬೌಟ್. ಬಟ್ ಸ್ಟಿಲ್, ಎಸ್ಪೆಷಲಿ ಇನ್ ದೀಸ್ ವರ್ಸಸ್ ದಟ್ ವಿ ರೆಡ್ ಟುಡೇ, ಲಾಟ್ ಆಫ್ ಇಂಟ್ರೆಸ್ಟಿಂಗ್ ಥೀಮ್ಸ್. ಸೊ ವಿ ಹ್ಯಾವ್ ಅ ಬ್ರಾಡರ್ ಥೀಮ್ ಆಫ್ ಅಂಡರ್ಸ್ಟ್ಯಾಂಡಿಂಗ್ ದ ವೇದಿಕ್ ಕಾಸ್ಮಾಲಜಿ, ಆ್ಯಂಡ್ ವಿತಿನ್ ದಟ್ ದೇರ್ ಇಸ್ ಅ ಸಬ್ ಥೀಮ್ ಆಫ್ Prabhupada talking about the principles of yajna and about sustainable living. So we'll try to weave all these concepts together and try to understand something today. So I'd like to begin today's class with a very famous story. Many of you might be knowing this, but with a slightly different take on it. So this is the story of young Gopal, right? So remember the story of Gopal? So this boy, he was the son of a very poor Brahmana, Brahmani, because his father passed away at a very young age. He was just taken care by his single widowed mother. And this boy was afraid to go, because for him to go to the school, he has to go through a forest. So he was very scared. So he would ask his mother, can you accompany me to drop me till school? But the mother says, look Gopal, I have to work. I have to maintain you, so we need to earn money, so I have to work. But don't worry, your elder brother is also there in the forest. His name is also Gopal, the cowherd boy. So whenever you are scared, just loudly call out to him and he will guide you. So the poor boy, he fully had faith in his mother's words. So he was going to the forest, some point he got scared. So he loudly called out to Gopal. And immediately Gopal reciprocated, said, don't worry, I will tell you how to go, I am there with you. But he never appeared. From behind the bushes he was talking. So he crosses, goes across, one day, 2 days. Then after few days he says, Gopal, I want to see you. Says, no, I am guiding you, right? Why do you want to see me? No, I really want to see you. So finally, Gopal gives his darshan. So this Gopal, the forest Gopal, he was dressed in beautiful yellow dhoti with a peacock feather on his head, having a flute in his waist, right? So then few months in fact transpired. Then one day the guru of the Gurukula, he wanted to do an yajna. So he asked all the students to give some guru dakshina. So he said, everybody get something. And he didn't have much expectations from this kid, because he knew they are not so well to do. So, but the boy goes, asks mother. Mother, guru is asking, he's doing a big yajna and he is asking all the students to give some contribution, give some dakshina. So, what can we give? So, the mother immediately frowns and says, oh no, we don't have much. But why don't you ask your friend Gopal? So, the next day again, he meets Gopal, says, Gopal, I have this problem, so I need something. So Gopal says, hey, I am also simple cowherd boy, what can I give you? Here, I have this pot of yogurt, you can give this yogurt to your guru. So fine, he goes, he puts his offering. Now guru looks, all the other kids bought big pots of, you know, grains and gold coins and whatever. This boy brings one humble pot of, like how we offer in the Maha, during the festivals, in this tiny pot we offer. But still Vrindavan Vihari accepts, like that. he brought a small pot of yogurt. So then the guru takes it. So then he thought, let me empty it. So he takes one small vessel, empties the whole pot, puts it aside. Suddenly the pot becomes full again. And he said, I thought I just emptied the pot. Again he empties the pot of yogurt, puts it aside. Again the pot is full. Then he takes a big container, keeps repeatedly emptying the pot. Every time he empties the pot, the simple matka again comes back to full. So the guru is surprised. He says, where did you get this pot? He says, my friend Gopal gave it. Really, tell me about your Gopal. Then he describes Gopal, and guru says, I want to go meet your friend Gopal. He says, yeah, sure. Then he goes back, takes him. Right? And then, what happens? Those of you know the story. How many of you know the story, first of all? Yeah, okay, good. Right? So for the rest of you who don't know the story, so this is what happens. The guru goes, Gopal is there in front of them, but only our little boy Gopal, he could see the forest Gopal. The guru could not see, the teacher could not see. And then he tells Krishna, Gopal, he tells our friend Gopal that, look, tell your teacher that in this lifetime he cannot see me. He needs to work on his whatever. He needs to work on it. That's what he says, and he ends, right? Now, most of us, we know this story, we understood the story. How many of you could believe this story? Raise your hand if you could believe this story. Okay. Muralidhar, you don't believe this story. Okay. So if you all could believe this story, why do we have difficulty in believing that there is a Jambu Dvipa and there is a big Kadamba tree and there is a big Jambu tree and there are jamuns the size of elephants that fall and crash and there are juices of jamuns and there are flowing honeys? Why is this difficult to believe? Why do we get stuck in this section of Bhagavatam? Right? We easily believe Gopal stories, we easily believe, you know, if Shivananda Prabhu has some special reciprocation with Vrindavan Bihari, we believe this, right? But this this section of Bhagavatam becomes very difficult, right? So this is a very important point in behind this story, is that, of course, one is Lord is Bhaktavatsal, we heard those lessons, but there's an important side lesson that I wanted to highlight upon. Our perception of reality is based on our state of consciousness. The young boy Gopal was fully Krishna conscious, therefore he could see Gopal, whereas his guru was not. This is such an important theme which is presented in the Vedic texts that we always tend to sideline. In fact, Bhaktivinoda Thakur calls this section of Bhagavatam as a filter. As a doorway, but I am calling it as a filter. Filter, in a sense, what does a filter do? It separates out. Before you go into the most esoteric section of Bhagavatam, this is a filter to remove all the non-believers out. Which is the most esoteric section of Bhagavatam? Not the Rasalila, but the glories of holy name which is going to come in the next chapter, next canto, Ajamil pastime. So if you really want to access the understanding and the grace of the holy name, we need to go through this filter. Only if you can, literally what, half of the book is still left. So if you go through another 500 pages of this book and still survive, and still continue happy, keeping your faith in this book, then you will be revealed the holy name, right? So, but of course, Bhagavatam does not want you to just put blind faith also. Bhagavatam actually prepared us to come to this point. That's the beauty of Bhagavatam. Right? It is an incremental book. To understand this section properly, we need to understand the third canto properly. Where Kapila is talking about the entire Sankhya Darshan. Right? Sankhya, the Darshan, what does the word Darshan mean? We have Gauranga Darshan Prabhu here. Right? One, that which is revealed, like when you say Darshan is open, the Lord is revealing Himself to our mortal vision. So to bring light on something, right, to reveal something is what is called as Darshan. So Sankhya Darshan, so all these Darshanas are worldviews. They give you the vision to see reality in a particular way. Right? So if you go back to our second canto, third canto, the whole creation episode, again another tough nut to crack sections of Bhagavatam which devotees like to jump. Right? So if you read that section, if you see how creation has been unfurled, what was the main aspect that you saw there which is different from the way we are taught modern science? The way creation from modern science and the way creation from Bhagavatam, the Sankhya Darshan, what is the main difference that you observed in terms of the way reality is? If you remember the creation of elements, right? How are the elements created? They are guna vyatikar. They are modifications, mutations of the gunas, right? Meaning, if you remember, the three gunas combined with what gives what? Which is the main element, the key ingredient there? The ahankar. Ahankar with sattva gives mind. Ahankar with rajas gives intelligence. And ahankar with tamas gives, right? So which means, this is a very, very unique and different perspective. Please think about this. The observer plays a very important role in understanding the creation. Observer means you and I. Ahankar is who? Us. Right? Which means, the modern science likes to present what is called as objective reality, where matter exists independent of the observer. Does it make sense? Right? Whether I am observing, whether I exist or not, matter has its own unique characteristics. Right? Like, we like to describe, oh, the board is green and there are some blue colors on it, it is solid. So we like to measure things. That's how modern science, it likes to always look at measurable parameters. But if you look at the Vedic science, we are talking about a subjective experience of reality. Whether it is black, whether it's a black board or a green board, it is a board as long as I can write on it. Right? Can you have a white board and use a white marker or a white chalk piece? No. Then it is no more a board for me. Right? So for my experience of writing with a chalk piece, I need a black board, a blue board, a green board. For me, it's all one board. Right? So the black, green, these objective variations, they do not matter to me as long as my experience of writing is happening. Right? This is the way Vedic sciences look at reality, from a very subjective experience. Even if you look at all the list of 24 elements that the Vedic science talks about, earth, water, fire, air, ether, and so on. Right? What are all of them? They are the 24 kinds of experiences we go through. Right? See, if I take this board, this hard wood, and if I hit it on my head, what will I experience? Pain. If I take this kartal and hit it on my head, what will I experience? Bleeding. Okay. Intense pain. If I take a solid gold block and hit it on my head, what will I experience? Pain. So whether it be wood, brass or gold, the experience bhutatva, solids, give to me are the same. So from experience point of view, whether it be wood, brass or gold, they all are in one big basket called as bhu, earth element. Right? But if I splash some water on me, I don't get the same experience. That is called jalatattva. Water or whatever, kerosene, any liquid. All liquids, they create a different experience for me. Right? So, they are all in one different box called as the jalatattva or liquids. And so on. So, literally the entire periodic table, you remember from high school? We studied in chemistry, that boring, how many of you, some of you may have to memorize that also, I don't know. Right? That whole long boring periodic table is just three elements of Sankhya. Earth, water, air. Fire and ether, modern science has no idea. Okay, fire, they may say plasma, whatever. There's a fourth state also. But the fifth state of ether, modern science has no idea. Right? So if you see, they are all creating a unique experience. So I have to place myself, the observer plays a very important role in terms of the creation, in terms of understanding the creation. However, we also have to note, there are certain other philosophies, like for example, Baudhavad and even a little bit of Jainavad also, where they say how we know the word Shunyavad. Right? Shunya means there is no reality. As long as you are observing, they heavily rely on the observer. Right? If you remember in one of my previous classes, I think 2-3 during the COVID, I gave that example of that King Milinda's conversation with Nagasena. Remember that one? So, once there was a famous king named Milinda who wanted to learn the Shunyavad philosophy from a Buddhist monk. His name was Nagasena. So, he goes to him and asks him, what is this Shunyavad? How are you saying that there is nothing in this world? Everything is dependent on the observer, the mind. If there is no mind, then there is no world. How do you explain that? He says, okay, how did you come here? He says, I came in a chariot. Okay, says, go get me the wheels of the chariot. He goes, rips apart the wheels, says, here are the wheels of the chariot. Says, now go get the seat of the chariot. Says, okay, go here. Oh, breaks the seat, brings it, take. Now go get the axle and the, you know, the yoke, which connects the horses. Go break that and bring. Says, okay. Go get the horses and the reins of the chariot. Brings. Literally, everything is here, right? Now he says, go get the chariot. What chariot? Everything is here. He says, no, these are wheels. This is the axle. This is the horse. This is the reins. Where is the chariot? He says, there is no chariot. Exactly. So, there is no reality. Or everything is one big mental construct. Right? Now, at this point, some of you may be convinced with this example and think, yeah, man, true. Right? So, don't become a Buddhist. So, what they miss out is the soul. Independent of the body, there is also a soul. But if, because they don't have a concept of soul, even if you take the head, hands, limbs, the torso of a person, there is still the soul which is independent of the body. So, there is some objective reality there. Anyway, so this is the other extreme of thinking, that heavily dependent on the observer. But the Vedic science is in between. If modern science is heavily reliant on the objectivity of the world, and the certain other world philosophies are exclusively focusing only on the subjectivity, we lie in between. This is the golden mean, the path in between, where it is not that matter exists independent of the observer, but our perception of matter depends on our state of consciousness. This is the important theme, right? And all these descriptions that we are discussing, going to discuss, starting from this chapter on, are talking about the greater earth. There's a very beautiful conversation. I thought of reading that, but I felt it would be too long. Later, please read it on your own. Srila Prabhupada's conversation in 1977 in his room in Vrindavan, July 3rd, 1977, right? In that, Tamal Krishna Maharaj is having a very intense debate with Prabhupada about, Prabhupada, how are you saying, I mean, if you go from north, from Bharat Varsha, you will get Ilavrata Varsha, right? If you go north, what comes? What comes if you keep going north, 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 north in an airplane? After Himalayas, what do you get? After China, what do you get? After Russia, what do you get? After North Pole, what will you get? Finally, you come back to where you started. Right? So, this is how we understand. This is the argument that Tamal Krishna Maharaj was giving. So, he was giving more like east to west. He said, Prabhupada, from Los Angeles, if I come to India, again, if I go past India, again I'll end up in Los Angeles. So, how are you saying that there is more to this earth? Then Prabhupada gives a very cryptic answer in one line. He says, they are all like dogs tied up. They are all like dogs tied up. So what do you understand from this? So yeah, imagine if you have a pole and a dog is tied with its leash, its rope, right? And so the dog, if it keeps going, if it keeps running around, it seems like the dog has traveled a lot, but it only has a certain limited perimeter around which it can travel. So the leash is a limitation to how much the dog can observe the reality around it. Likewise, Prabhupada's statement there is that our state of consciousness is also the leash which binds us to a certain level of worldly experience. But if you can enhance your state of consciousness, you can actually, beyond Himalayas, if you cross, you don't go to China. You go to Ilavrata Varsha at one point, right? You have to cross all the three Varshas and then the three mountains and then go to Ilavrata Varsha. Probably you'll meet Lord Shiva also there, right? Today there is a, you can go on a tourism trip to Mount Kailash, which is now in China. So the Indian Army will take you to Manasarovar, Kailash. There are guided tours by Indian Army. They take you there. But if you go there, you are not going to meet Lord Shiva there. Because we are dogs tied to a leash. Right? Because at our state of consciousness, we can only perceive part of the reality. We cannot observe the full reality. So with that limited perspective, some of these concepts may not make sense for us. Right? But why is Parikshit being taught all these things? I mean, is it anywhere relevant to him? Think about it. Well, one answer we read already, I think in the third verse of this chapter, Sukhdeva Goswami himself says that how by studying the creation you are actually studying the glories of the Lord. When the mind is fixed upon the personality of Godhead and his external feature made of the material modes of nature, which is the gross universal form. So this entire srishti, material srishti, is the Virata Rupa of the Lord. It is brought to the platform of pure goodness. So by studying the Virata Rupa, you can come to Sattvagun. In that transcendental position, one can understand Lord Vasudeva, who is his subtler form, who in his subtler form is self-effulgent and beyond the gunas. So basically by studying the srishti, you can understand the srishti karta. By studying the creation, you can understand the creator. Right? That is the... But then, something suddenly happened in this journey. If you look at the history of modern science also, all the famous universities that you can think of today, they were all schools of religion at one point. Whether it be Oxford, whether it be MIT, Cambridge, they all were schools of divinity. Even all the great scientists of the past that you know of, for example, Newton himself was a priest. Right? But then, and they also started their journey with the same intention that by studying the creation, I can know the creator. But over a period of time, we started observing certain physical phenomena of this world, started putting them into mathematical equations, started experimenting with them, started getting results, and most importantly, we developed the ability to manipulate material energy. And suddenly, what science which started as a quest to understand the creator became a quest to become your own creator. What technology does, it gives you the power to create, right? But in the process, because your consciousness has now been modified into a mini Ishvara, Ahankara, Prabhupada quotes in that conversation also, Ahankara vimudhatma kartaham iti manyate, right? So because of that Ahankara, immediately a major section of reality is blocked from our perception, right? So, in the world of philosophy, this is called as epiphenomenalism. Right? So, very simple example to teach this. So, imagine, remember in the old days there used to be steam engines. Right? Now, imagine if there's a steam engine and an observer outside that steam engine is looking at that steam engine, and he says, whenever a whistle comes, a whistling sound comes, the engine moves, the train moves. Therefore, the whistle is the cause for the movement of the engine. True or false? Well, from the observer's perspective, may be true, but yeah, in actuality, false. Okay? Then another observer comes. So this is scientist one. His second person is scientist two. What does he say? He says, no, it's not the whistle. It's actually the steam coming out. You see one black smoke which is coming, out of the chimney. That is the cause for the movement of the train. And this guy is even smart. You know what he does? He comes up with a device to measure the speed at which the smoke is coming out of the chimney. And he finds a mathematical equation linking the speed of the exhaust to the velocity of the train, which you can do, right? So now he has become the new bigger scientist. And now with mathematics you can prove, you can predict the movement of the train. You can know many other parameters of the train, when the train is going to slow down, when it is going to act, you know all these things about the train. So now you wrote a whole theory called as the law of smoke exhaust. Again, ask yourself this question, is that true? Why is the train moving? Why is the engine moving? Because there is a person inside that engine who is putting coal in the furnace, and that heat is causing steam, that steam is causing the pistons to move, and that's how that engine is moving. All of this is invisible to the observer outside the train. Or in other words, if your consciousness is outside the train, you can never perceive that level of reality. This is the science behind devatas, yajnas, virata purushas. From our level of perception, I cannot see Indra, Vayu, Agni, who are they, what are they, right? They are like the people inside the steam engine putting coal and causing the engine to move. But from our level of reality, right, from this Adi Bhautika level of reality, we cannot observe the Adi Daivika level of reality. So we are stuck. So we have so many laws at our level of reality. We have all the laws of physics that can explain these things. But certain aspects we are disconnected from, right? So Prabhupada in this purport, he also quoted how we should do these yajnas. He quoted Annad Bhavanti Bhutani. Right? Just imagine if you tell someone that rains happen because of yajnas. Right? The person will say, what's wrong with you? Did you escape from some mental asylum? Right? But this is the same epiphenomenalism. They have observed the smoke coming out of the chimney and said, yes, there is evaporation happening, blah, blah, blah. Okay, right? But what is ensuring that water has the property to evaporate? Who is ensuring that the water has a property to evaporate? Varundev is taking care of that. What is causing that evaporation? Suryadev is taking care of that. What is making sure that all the vapor comes together and proper, you know, cloud formation happens and the condensation, the precipitation happens? Indradev is taking care of that, right? So these Adidaivik entities, we cannot perceive from our level of reality. But the Vedas do present a channel, a medium to connect these different dimensions. So our worldly dimension, earthly dimension, Adi Bhutika dimension, and the Adidaivika dimension, the way to connect them is through yajna. And that's what Prabhupada here is talking about, that how by performing these Vedic yajnas, prosperity will reign in the form of all these supply of milk, yogurt, honey, etc. All the natural resources will be there. So this was the system, the technology that people used back then for ensuring prosperity. However, because we have become disconnected from these subtle aspects of creation, we are becoming more and more, as Prabhupada also writes here, we are becoming dwarfs. Right? We are becoming dwarfs, not just physically, but even intellectually, mentally, even in terms of our consciousness, we are becoming dwarfs. Therefore, our experience of the subtle realities is getting diminished. So what to do? We are focusing on the gross level of reality. Right? And therefore, we have developed so much of technology. And at this level, how do you ensure prosperity? Through factories, through industries, and so on. Right? So, nothing to blame them. What to do? This is what they can perceive. However, what onus does it come upon us? What onus do we have as spiritualists interacting in this modern world? What role can we play in terms of bridging this gap? Right? We all know that famous story of how Prabhupada did that famous Harinam Sankirtan in Hyderabad, and suddenly, which is a drought, and suddenly started raining, and ISKCON became an overnight sensation. Right? Prabhupada became an overnight sensation in Hyderabad. Right? So yes, we can do those things. However, we need to deepen this. We need to deepen our understanding of the principle of yajna. Right? So this yajna, annat bhavanti bhutani, what you see in the third chapter is dravya yajna. What we do every day, where we are, of course, this is a little spiritual, but in general yajnas, we are putting certain ingredients. There's a whole way of doing it. I remember struggling to explain yajna to some of my YTTC students. We used to start back then. First day, we used to have a yajna. So one of the students, he just asked, so why are we starting the course with a barbecue? Because Prabhuji puts in the end, you know, all the fruits are also put inside, right? So he thought this is a vegetarian barbecue. So he said, why are we starting the course with a barbecue? Right? So I had to sit down and explain to him many concepts. I said, but in the end, I had to tell him, you wait till the end of the course, because your consciousness will also improve by then to understand these things. Yeah, something he understood at the end of the course. But yeah, so this is still dravya yajna. However, the Gita also talks about a higher level of yajna, right? Done at the level of consciousness, jnana yajna, right? Where our life itself can be perceived as a yajna. However, there are three symbolic things in it, three important aspects of a yajna. One is the fire, of course. Second is the ingredients that you put into the fire, the ahuti, swaha, the ingredients that you put. And third is the result of the yajna. Right? Now, why do we perform this kind of yajnas? What does participating in a yajna do to you? Okay, you pray. So you get some benefit that way. Okay, very good. Right? And what could be the best prayer you can make? What is the best thing you can get from a yajna? Let all things be used in your service. Yes, very good. Which means, right now, we are not pure enough to see. There's a whole veil of selfish ego around us. So, the end goal of any yajna is purity of your consciousness. Right? In the dravya yajna, we achieve it by offering, by sacrificing things into the fire and achieve purity of consciousness. Likewise, even in the higher level yajna also, the end goal is the same, purity of consciousness. But, guess what's the fire? This is the fire of a higher cause, a higher purpose in your life. And guess what the ahuti is? Your own attachments, your own shortcomings, right? So these are the things. So in the fire of a spiritual cause, spiritual purpose, when you put in the offerings of your attachments, you will experience purification of consciousness. This is the next level of, higher level of it. That's why Krishna says, Brahmarpanam, Brahmavir, Brahmagno, Brahmano Hutam. Everything can be spiritualized. There you don't need to go to morning 6 a.m. You can start your yajna at 4 a.m. itself. You know how? What do you do at 4 a.m.? Huh? Okay, what do you do at 3:30 a.m. then? What do you do after snoozing? Take bath. You know, this is called the bath yajna, which can be done only in the bathroom. In the fire of water, if you put in the oblations of your morning laziness, you will experience sattva, purity of consciousness. Right? In the fire of your seva, right? If you put in your attachment of your laziness, you will experience purity of your consciousness. Right? Every aspect of your life can now become a yajna. Right? And believe it or not, all this self-help world, people are writing books on this and minting money. Right? Today, purpose, life purpose is the biggest theme. Even our devotees are also talking on along these lines, right? But this is the very foundation of the Vedic lifestyle, the Vedic worldview, right? Where our actions are now motivated not by our own selfish intentions, but for a higher cause. And this yajna is so beautiful. That's why if you see later on all the different yajnas that Gita talks about, right? In the fire of the ear, what does a brahmachari offer? Shravanam, right? Then that leads to purification of consciousness. In the fire of senses, if a grihastha offers, in the fire of sense objects, if one puts in the senses, means in a regulated way, if one indulges with the, interacts with the sense objects, that leads to purification. Right? In the fire of your responsibility, if you offer in all your attachments, then you will experience. So now you see, there is everything in your life you have a potential to make spiritual advancement. What you, every time you see any obstacle in your life, visualize a fire there. Right? And whatever is holding you back, that is your ahuti. Swaha. Do that and you will see your consciousness will get purified. You will feel that you have, as you go through that fire, you will grow through that fire. Right? This is the whole principle of yajna. Right? So if you can teach this to people, right? This is the way in every aspect of your life you can be spiritual, and this is the way you can purify your consciousness, and this is the way one day we'll qualify ourselves to experience these higher dimensional realities. And that is why when we read descriptions like this, even whether it be in Mahabharata also, when Pandavas, they just crossed past the Himalayas, or even Madhvacharya went to Badrikashram and he met Vyasdev there, right? How did they do all this? If you and I go there, we will just see some ice and we'll come back, right? In fact, I've actually been to Vyas Gufa. I didn't see Vyasdev there. I wish I did, but I couldn't, right? And they say there's a flowing Saraswati River there. I couldn't see anything there, right? I just went, took photos and came back, right? But those who can see Vyasdev still there, right? So it's like, I'd like to end with one very small this thing. So these concepts are so, don't think they are just within our own Vedic culture. There have been many historians, authors, even thinkers and scientists from the Western world and westernized world who have been inspired by these concepts, and they have written books, some in the field of science, some also in the field of literature, right? So there is a very interesting, some of you might have heard this famous book called as Alice in Wonderland, right? Who's the author? Lewis Carroll, very good, right? So Lewis Carroll had, and there's also this another book called as Chronicles of Narnia. Do you know this book? Right? So even in that, remember the author of this book? C.S. Lewis. Yes. Wow. Brilliant. Thank you. So C.S. Lewis and Lewis Carroll were friends in school. They were schoolmates. And there was also a third person. His name was... the book he wrote is called as Saving the Appearances. Bartland. Yeah, Bartland. That was his name. Anyway, name is... So these three were friends. So all these three had a common teacher. Right? So who is the founder of biodynamic farming? Do you know his name? No, not the even the ancient version, right? So interesting, they all had a common teacher. Some of this is a spontaneous point. My memory is failing me here, and some of the names I've missed out. But very famous guy anyway. So this guy, this I'm talking about is 1920s India. So him and Annie Besant were together as part of the Theosophical Society of India. And Theosophical Society, they studied many of the Vedic literature, the Upanishadic literatures and so on. Who is the founder of our, this whole famous homeschooling concept also? These Waldorf schools. Remember the name? No. Whoever has internet access can just Google for the founder of the Waldorf schools. I think his name starts with R. So anyway, so this guy, at certain point, the Theosophical Society, they split because of certain internal issues. They wanted to declare somebody else as a... They wanted to declare Jiddu Krishnamurti as the next avatar of Jesus Christ. Rudolf Steiner. Yes, Rudolf Steiner. Yes, the whole Steiner model of education. Yes, thank you. So Rudolf Steiner, Annie Besant, they were all part of the society. But later the society split and Rudolf Steiner went back. And he comes from a very traditional Orthodox Christian background. So he went back. Even though that time the Nazi atrocities also started. So from Germany, again, he fled back to England. He settled in England. And there, he started the first Steiner School, which is popular as the Waldorf schools today. And under him were these three students, C.S. Lewis, Lewis Carroll, and Hartmann, Thomas Hartmann, right? So while C.S. Lewis and Lewis Carroll took a more literary approach. So if you see the common theme in all of them, Alice falls down the rabbit hole and there's a whole new dimension. In Chronicles of Narnia, you open the closet and there's a whole new dimension. And in that dimension, animals are talking, right? There's a king, the lion is the king there, something like that, you know. However, Thomas Hartmann, he takes this more mathematical and physics approach where... Sorry, his name is Barfield. Yes. Owen Barfield, not Thomas. Owen Barfield is the name of this guy. And there's a whole field started called as Barfieldism, where he talks about how there is more to reality than just what you see, what the senses are seeing. And he created some mathematical model also of that. So, I mean, this is one example I'm trying to quote to show that how don't think only Bhagavatam is an esoteric book to understand. If you read any of those authors also, they are also equally esoteric. Right? It's just that they use a different narrative, a different kind of language, a different kind of semantics. So people at least pay attention to them. But when we read books like Bhagavatam, we think, oh, these are all religious mythologies. Right? So don't look down upon these things because these are all state-specific books. Based on your state of consciousness, reality will unfold. Okay? So thank you all so much for your very patient listening. If anybody has any questions or comments they'd like to add, yes. How could we not have a question from you?
Thank you so much, Prabhu, for such a wonderful class. I just want to know something about yajnas. You said we perform sacrifices for purification. But I thought it's an expression of gratitude. And we perform sacrifice to please certain personality. And in a karmakandic sense, you need some returns also in that. So satisfying the person will give us purification. And most of the time we may perform sacrifice, and if you are unable to please, then it won't get purification. May the person go through the hardships also like that.
Okay. So, the word purification of consciousness has a spectrum. At the most fundamental level, just going beyond rajas and tamas and coming to sattva is one level of purification. And empowered by that sattva, we get certain gifts from the cosmos, from the devatas. That is another level of purification. Empowered by that purity, one can also gain ability to control their mind and senses. That is another level of purification. And of course, the highest purification is manifestation of love. So, there are three things that you overlapped in your answer, in question there. One is when you said, the goal of yajna is to please the yajna purusha. That is a very bhakti level of looking at it, because for you, your definition of purification is love. Right? But then in the question, you also said that we are also trying to get some things. Right? So there, you are again bringing it to the second level that I've mentioned here, where there is certain reciprocation from the universe you are getting in the form of, you know, because you are basically changing certain flows of energy patterns around you, causing manifestation of certain physical objects, right? So that is one level you are looking at. At the same time, the same yajna can also be used to alter your thought patterns. Thought patterns is a modern word. The traditional word would be karmic impressions, your karma samskaras. So yajnas can also have the potential to alter some of these karmic samskaras, impressions that we have. So that is more at the dhyana and jnana level of looking at it. So the karma, jnana, dhyana and bhakti. So these are all different levels of looking at the same yajna. However, the level at which you are looking at, the nature of yajna also changes. Right? So that is why, even though as we are a bhakti yoga sampradaya tradition. However, when we are doing a Vedic fire sacrifice, we don't just sit there and do kirtan. When you are inviting the Lord as Yajna Purusha, there is a protocol in which Yajna Purusha has to be invited. Yajna Purusha is not to be invited with sankirtan. He has to be invited through the proper yagyic way. Right? So there we follow that particular protocol. However, the intention, as you rightly pointed out, here we are not interested in just some altering our karma or just getting some manifesting a certain physical energies, but we are interested in our spiritual growth. So from the purpose point of view, yes. But then, yeah. So that's why when Prabhupada says even Sankirtan is a yajna, right? So if you see, what is the fire in Sankirtan? The holy name. What is the ahuti? Your consciousness. What is the result? Prema. Right? That is the Sankirtan Yajna. So these three things are always there in any yajna. So just you have to be a little careful not to overlap these things. That's all. Yeah.
And for whom we are doing yajna is also important like that.
Yes, right. Of course. And that's why, so the way you satisfy the yajna purusha in a Vedic yajna, in a fire yajna, is different from the way you satisfy, say for example, the deities. Even deity is also, the deity is also kind of a yajna. But here, you have to do certain upacharas. Deity worship, there's a whole process, right? So that is the yajna that you do with the deity worship. In deity worship, as you many times heard, cleanliness and punctuality. Right? So in the fire of cleanliness and punctuality, you put all the offerings that are going into it. Right? Then you will experience reciprocation from the deity. Like that. Yes, Prabhu.
So thank you, Prabhu. This was very wonderfully explained by you through many examples that how understanding of anything is state specific. I was just wondering, what is it to explain something to somebody who is not in the same state or same platform is something like explaining color to a colorblind person. We can talk about wavelengths and so many other things, but he won't get it until he gains the ability to see colors. Then only he can understand what we are trying to say. So I was just curious, what could be the different factors by which even a person who is at different state or lower state, let's say, at least becomes curious to know that or understands that there is something which I don't know right now because my state is not the same. Maybe there is something higher state, but just to gain faith in that, what could be the different factors? Like, I think if we focus on that, I mean, teaching will be very...
Absolutely. Simple. Yeah, exactly. It's a very nice point. So, actually, there are, again, this so much can be elaborated on this. What we are discussing are these different states is what we call as adhikar. So, we all have different levels of adhikar, qualification, right? And it's very important that we give the right level of teachings according to the right level of their adhikar. If you prematurely talk about something else, then you are confusing the other person. So, what creates that adhikar, and what is the difference in the levels of adhikar, is what we are calling as Shraddha. Now, what contributes to Shraddha? Shraddha is not just faith. Many times, though we hear translations like that, personally, in my explanations, I always like to use the word spiritual conviction. That's a better translation of the word Shraddha. And what contributes to spiritual conviction are multiple factors. One, of course, your past impressions, for sure, right? Two, your present state of gunas. Three, your own current spiritual practice, right? Even your upbringing, the culture around you, all of this, the composite effect of all of this defines Shraddha, right? So, and of course, there is the Mahat Kripa, Sukruti, these things are there. They are like the atom bombs. All of these, no way come into picture. They can inundate anybody, right? But in general, it's important that, in fact, preaching, according to me, is creating that level ground for people to understand higher concepts, right? And therefore, in our preaching, many times we end up focusing so much on the abhideya, what to do, rather than telling them what is the prayojan that you should aspire for. Because your goal defines your process. If the goal is clear, process just makes sense. If your goal is prema, then bhakti makes sense. But if your goal is mukti, then you are confused. Should I do jnana or bhakti? Because both of them will give you mukti. If your goal is just purification, karma, jnana, bhakti, all give you three. All are equal from the point of view of purification. So it's important that we communicate to people or build bridges for people to understand why prema pumarto mahan, prema as the highest prayojan, as the highest goal, why is it important, right? And I think if you just do that, you don't have to struggle regarding teaching them what to do. What to do becomes very intuitive and natural. And if you carefully see, this is the approach which all our scriptures take, all our acharyas in their commentaries, they are only glorifying the prayojan. Right? Even in inter-sampradaya or inter-religious whatever, you know, discussions are in these places, they are only talking about prayojan. What is a prayojan according to you? Right? And then, once you understand prayojan, then you ask, okay, if this is your abhideya, will your abhideya give this prayojan? No. Therefore, take this. Simple. Right? So I think, yeah, this is the approach I feel we should take up. All right? Thank you all so much. Grantharaj Srimad Bhagavat Mahapurana ki jai. Shri Prabhupada ki jai. Anantakoti Vaishnavinda ki jai.